Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. For today's episode, I actually have a very wonderful guest that will be discussing a movie with me today, so please stay tuned. It is quite gloomy outside, but it seems like the sun will be out soon, hopefully. So I guess get excited for that. Today we'll be doing another movie review. My shows are not usually on Thursday mornings. Today's actually a fill-in that I will be doing, so it's a special episode, so please listen in. That's it for today's introduction. Let's get through some PSAs and some ads and begin the show. So here we go.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
I love CITR 101.9 FM.
I love CITR 1.0.1.9 FM.
What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing if you're not listening to Planet Emit Flodostin on CITYITRY101.99 FM every other Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Pacific?
On January 17th, CITR 101.9 FM presents our annual 24 Hours of Radio Art Programming, featuring innovative approaches to music and sound. It's 24 hours of spoken word, ambient drone field recordings and sound walks, collage, technical support calls, voicemail fills, sound art, and noise. Listen live on CITR 101.9 or online at CITR.ca. For more details and submission requirements, email us at radioart@citr.ca.
Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you, this time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I hope you guys are having a great start of your morning. Like I said, for today's episode, I will be doing another movie review with a lovely guest that I've met in one of my seminar classes for English. So why don't we get into the episode? Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Sopin. I'm an English student, and I would say I'm one of the biggest Twilight fans in the world.
Wow, in the world, that's a big statement. So this movie suggestion was actually made by Sopin. So I want to start off with asking, why Twilight out of all the movies in the world?
Well, I did suggest a couple other ones, but I was really hoping you would pick Twilight. I've seen it 9 times, and I wanted to talk about it because I think that there's a lot of merit to the fact that it continues to generate a lot of conversation and discourse. So yeah, there's always something to say about that movie.
What genre would you consider the movie as?
I wrote a paper on this.
Okay.
Twilight defies genre.
Okay. I think for me, it's quite difficult to consider this. I know it's not a romantic comedy per se, but I'll get into this towards the end of the episode of why I think it's kind of like a comedy or how I viewed it within that scope. But yeah, do you want to start off with telling me what specific aspects of the movie you enjoyed, whether it's certain scenes or, you know, characters or the fantastical aspect that it's about vampires and wolves?
Yeah, I love supernatural media. That was one of the reasons why I originally started watching Twilight and becoming obsessed with it. And like you said, it is pretty hilarious in a lot of ways. It is very comical and absurd, and I love that it leans into that, especially the first movie. Yeah, I mean, in terms of specific characters, I'm Team Edward.
Oh, no. Would you care to elaborate why you chose Team Edward?
Well, okay, I'll amend that. I'm Team Bella. I think she needs a nice little vacation into think about her life choices. We love her so much. However, if it's between Edward, the really old vampire, and Jacob, who imprints on Bella's daughter, I think the choice is pretty clear there.
You know what? Why don't we just... This was initially written or kind of planned to discuss the first Twilight movie, but I want to go into the imprint of...
Oh, gosh.
...of Jacob. So... Just to clarify, if werewolves imprint on people, or do they have to imprint on people, or could it be just other wolves as well? Do you know?
They imprint on their mates.
Okay, yes. So do you have an argument for... I think that the reason why it's in a way justified mm-hmm. is it was used to protect Renesmee. I think that was her name.
Yes, Renesmee.
So do you have a counter to that argument?
Renesmee is a child.
Okay, yes. Okay, yes, that is a valid point. However, one of my questions that I actually have for you is, what sort of aspects of Bella do you think was so appealing to Edward that led to their love to blossom throughout the movie, considering Edward is 100 and something years old and Bella is... in a freshman in high school or a sophomore, somewhere along the lines of...
Yeah, the timeline of it is wonky. It takes place in the span of like a year and a half. Yeah, I'm not sure about her
Yeah,
age.
No, I think I think Bella... Yeah, no, I going back to the question, I honestly do not know what exactly Edward was so intrigued with her. I think it might be this, the fact that she's kind of in this isolated situation just like them, because, you know, they, you know, the Cullen family always has to travel and migrate to places to avoid any conflict with other humans, of them realizing who they are. Whereas Bella kind of, was she forced to go live with her father or something like that?
Her mother was traveling with her new partner, so Bella took it upon herself to move to Forks to live with her dad.
Yeah, so do you think there's any sort of that relevancy that really intrigued Edward into loving Bella? Sorry, I just want to cut you off. We have a call coming in. I never usually get calls, so if you can hear me, would you like to answer the call or say hi?
Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
Good. Hey, I'm listening in, and I'm not sure that your microphone is on. I can hear your guest just fine, but you're not. You sound kind of distant.
Oh, okay. Thanks for letting me know. I will get with my technical, my manager, and then try to fix that. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, no worries, buddy. Have a good day.
Awesome. You too. Thanks. Okay, it seems like my mic is not working very well. Let's take a 2-minute break, and we will come right back and answer that question. So enjoy this song, and we will be right back.
Trans folks, with the purpose being to make bike mechanics more inviting and accessible to folks traditionally excluded from the industry. Visit the Bike Kitchen on Wednesdays from 6:15 to 9 p.m., located in the basement of the Life Building. We hope to see you there.
Pensive, this water since out the tap, so fresh, fresh and modern as outcast, and so clean, these ice cubes contemplative as ODB, this light's blue endlessness, ultramagnetic, and half-shark alligator rising from some primordial past layer, your black neighbor blaring his Deltron, his Lil Wayne mixtapes till the scary elves are gone, psychotic at that MIA concert. He thought himself a black Jedi and a philosopher, reading in the Wookiee's frown, destruction. He taught himself Boogie Down Productions. The roommates asking could he count the muffins. All his study to read Pound, it was for nothing. There's far more wisdom in Missy Elliott. Her precision clean and definite. Rappers erect and prominent as Q-tip. An NWA to the cops, their red and blue blips. A siren song uncensored as his black moon. Flashing the room effortless as Andrew. His life a long project unfinished as he lazes and listens to common...
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you can hear me more clearly now. It seems like there was a slight... mix up with the mics, but thank you for the person who called in and listened. A huge shout out. But why don't we get back into discussion? So Bella, what do you think is so appealing that she portrays to Edward that leads into their love in the movie?
Well, like you were saying, I think there is a bit of relatability there in terms of her isolation, but there's the first thing that really draws Edward in is her smell. He really wants to taste her blood, and he's really seducted by that. And then as he gets to know her, the other thing that really draws him in is the fact that he can't read her mind. So she's a bit of an enigma to him, and I think that intrigues him. And the fact that she is so insistent in terms of getting to know him, really rubs him the wrong way.
The thirst scene with Edward towards Bella's blood was quite comedic with the facial expressions that Edward was revealing. But do you think it was specifically her blood that was kind of... He seemed very disgusted by it, by the way, especially disgusted by it.
Do you think in the biology room?
Yeah, in the biology room. Mm-hmm. Because there was no open wound. It was more so about, like, the wind hit her hair and that kind of scent threw him off or something. I thought it was that. But do you think that whole overly stimulating smell that Bella had kind of gives her, or maybe talks about her character as being supernatural in a sense?
Maybe more susceptible to the supernatural. Her character is really set up to be someone who is willing to turn into a vampire herself, willing to put herself in harm's way for them. So I think it is speaking more to her attraction towards that kind of life rather than her being supernatural herself. Of course, later on in the movies, she does turn into a vampire, and that's a whole plot line that gets kind of crazy.
Yeah, and kind of going into the thirst for blood, do you think the thirst for blood translates into any connection between the humans and their society and maybe has some sort of symbolism with the way that the society is driven throughout the world in the movie?
I mean, when I was watching it, I saw it as a pretty clear metaphor for just unhinged hormones of teenagehood and just the social world of high school in general. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you on that. The world of hormones and high school, just it's a very chaotic experience. And I think maybe the fact that Edward being older and the insane amount of resistance that he shows Bella with, you know, isolating himself, you know, with her and kind of only hanging out with the Cullen family in the cafeteria scene where they kind of have like their own group, kind of goes to show that self-control and kind of in a sense like a maturity that Edward and their family has over Bella, who's literally in high school. So I guess that kind of comparison was kind of what I picked up throughout that scene. Was there any scene in particular that you enjoyed or thought that was kind of confusing at all, or maybe didn't help out with the plot, or, you know, why is this scene implemented into the movie? Or, you know, anything at all.
I think you could pick any scene from that movie and question why it's there. I mean, I think that's the joy of it. I would say that this scene is pretty vital to the movie, but it is really hilarious, which is the diner scene when Bella and Charlie, her dad, are eating together, and she picks up the bottle of ketchup and like is squirting it over her food, but nothing comes out. So she's just shaking it in the air.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of things like that. Do you happen to know this guy who makes a lot of Twilight memes with very long hair, and he impersonates Bella you know, doing her scenes? It's quite funny the way that Bella's like facial expressions are like, and the way that she exchanges dialogue with people. I think that was kind of funny. But I specifically pinpointed the scene where Edward protects Bella from the van in the school. Mm-hmm. I think it was after school. How do you feel about that scene of just, you know, that heroic action that took place? Almost cliche, you know, the one hand stop and, you know, the whole speed up to save Bella. So what do you think about that? And the fact that he got away with it, and there's so many people around him, and that wasn't the moment where he kind of got caught with his powers. So what do you think about that scene?
Mm-hmm. It is pretty hard to believe that the Cullens get away with being vampires, especially having lived there for so long. But I mean, I find the van scene funny as well, but I think it really nails the kind of action genre that the other movies don't get as well. And I think that has a lot to do with the director, Catherine Hardwicke. The other movies are directed by other people, and they don't have the grit and edge that she does. So even when it is quite comedic, it clashes and meshes at the same time really well with all of the action-packed, like, thriller and that kind of, that kind of vibe in the movie.
Yeah, for sure. And going more on Edward and his vampire-ness, what sort of connotations, whether it's positive or negative, did you feel throughout the character of a vampire in the movie, whether it was something that's needed in the human society or was it something that you found that should be avoided or it's not appropriately placed in a society where, you know, humans are where they inhabit?
Mm-hmm. I think vampires are interesting because in a lot of ways they represent these repressed desires that a lot of normal humans aren't allowed to express. It's interesting how it plays out. There's this whole plot line in the second movie where they talk about souls, and it doesn't seem to be very important to the integrity of these vampires and their humanity. In terms of, like, how vampires integrate into society, I think the fact that they are in opposition to the werewolves in Forks is quite problematic, and a lot of people have discussed it, a lot of scholars as well. They're a white family living on land that is not theirs, and they're encroaching upon a lot of the other characters in the movie, so that is an interesting layer to it, I think.
Now that you mention it, I do feel like they are almost invading in someone else's environment because they are feeding off of the animals there and the resources there. It's just that they are not, I mean, for the Cullen family, if you say vampires in general, they are harming humans, and that's kind of the whole issue that's being held throughout the movie. You know, they're trying to track down why are these people dying, and, like, I think they also kill animals and the carcasses are there or something. In that way, I do feel like they are not seen as a positive living species. Well, they're not living, but, you know. But I also do feel like the Cullen family in particular is in a way a positive influence towards the society. And I think it doesn't directly correlate with how the society functions. I think it's just the message that they try to portray with, you know, like you said, the desires doesn't always need to, you know, connect with, you know, vampires wanting blood, but it could be human desires as well. So it's kind of the whole idea of being able to recognize those desires, but also learn how to restrain yourself from, you know, going into actions that are uncivil.
I think the Cullen family, they kind of get a get out of free card because they're vegetarians, quote unquote. They only drink animal blood. But like you were saying, they are really, like, using up these resources in the land of people who have lived there for a really long time. Whereas other vampires that we see in the series are more nomadic, and they travel and they don't situate themselves in a particular spot for a really long time. They keep moving. So it's interesting how the Cullens kind of are not necessarily problematic, maybe in some ways, but they're not strictly good or bad.
Yeah. I want to touch a little bit more on the fact that other vampires... Well, not even other vampires, I don't think, because who are the people that are the head of the vampires? I forgot his name.
The Volturi.
Yeah, so do you want to talk about their whole hierarchy system? So where do they live? And they're not really migrating. They're kind of in, like, this... It's not heaven, but it's like this other dimension almost. Well, that's how I kind of perceived it as. It's not a location that humans normally go to, I guess, or it's mm-hmm. in some sort of dungeon.
It's a tourist location. It looks like a chapel. I'm not sure what the actual building is, But yeah, they live in a really big tower, and they live in secrecy, and the one kind of law that they have that they uphold all the other vampires in the world to is that humans aren't allowed to know that they exist. And the Cullens really push that boundary, especially wanting to turn Bella into a vampire later on in the series. So yeah, I mean, they're kind of very totalitarian, and they're not particularly forgiving of the vampires. They tend to execute a lot of the ones that they try in their court. But I mean, that is kind of the only law that they hold themselves to.
Yeah, do you think it's better, let's say you were a vampire, we were all vampires, do you think it's better to, as a vampire who's living in a world where humans are the dominant species, to migrate from other places, or is it better, like the Cullens, to kind of stay in one place and, you know, try to set yourself there as long as you can before, you know, someone notices or something? Do you think there was a reason why the Cullen family, who is considered better than the other vampires, was kind of put in that situation where they chose to just stick to one place? Could it be that it's trying to, they're trying to resemble themselves as humans because humans kind of stick in one place? Or, yeah, any thoughts on that?
I might be getting the lore wrong, but I do know that the Cullens, after they age out of high school, they do move to other cities, and they have properties around the world, but they do always end up coming back to Forks. But I think, on the other hand, I'm very partial to vampires, not just in Twilight, because they are kind of this monstrous other in the horror genre. And that means that they're representing a portion of society that is underrepresented and that are ostracized in a lot of ways. So I think that there's that kind of factor there. But in the Twilight world, yeah, it does get a little bit murky trying to categorize which vampires are good or not. And then in the final movie, when that big battle scene happens, the battle scene that is not actually a battle scene, you do get that clear differentiation between, like, the good Cullens and their allies versus the Volturi and their army.
Yeah, and kind of going back to the end, why do you think Bella was so eager to turn herself to become a vampire? Because couldn't she have technically held on to her relationship with Edward by growing old, in a sense? Or did she have to turn into a vampire and sacrifice her humanity?
So Bella is a victim of being scared of aging.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in the second movie, in New Moon, it opens with this scene where she's dreaming, and she looks into the mirror, and Edward is wishing her happy birthday, and she looks into the mirror, and it's her grandmother's reflection. And she's so terrified of this idea of growing older, and it's not even, I don't think it's even a fear of dying and not being able to be with Edward anymore. She just views becoming a vampire as a solution to staying together with him, and staying together with him in a way that doesn't challenge, I think, her, like, conceptualization of herself. She's very attached to making sure that she's beautiful for Edward. No judgment there, you know. It's understandable, but it is pretty outrageous that's the solution that she jumps to.
That's a great point. I never thought of Bella being afraid of aging, but now that you mention it, I do seem like I agree with you on that. For me, I thought the fact that she wanted to change into a vampire and sacrifice living, you know, quote unquote, a normal life with her family, because once she turns, she can't really engage with her father in particular, you know, daily, in her daily life. So I thought that kind of emphasized on the romance aspect of the movie, you know, how much she was willing to sacrifice, whether it was
in a way selfish for her to make that a solution to kind of relieve her fear of aging, or, you know, trying to stay beautiful. But I think it kind of did emphasize on that love aspect of the movie and how strong the romance was between Edward and Bella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really ties back to the fact that this book series and the movies are all an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. Like, it's that, like, undying love, and nothing can pull them apart, even her family and all of her loved ones.
That's a great comparison. Yeah, it does have that Romeo and Juliet plot where it's like the unforbidden love.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's eternal as well. The fact that they're both vampires, and then, you know, Romeo and Juliet both died. But, you know, kind of their souls or something still exist.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like
Shakespeare
that.
Shakespeare was onto something there.
But yeah, so I want to move on to the social media aspect of the way that the movie's portrayed, how a lot of people, you know, made these different reels and memes about it. How do you think the comedic content and memes that were created in social media were influenced in terms of how people perceive the movie or the characters, themes? What are your thoughts on that?
So yeah, ever since the first Twilight movie came out, it has been publicly hated and publicly loved and publicly loved to be hated on. It's I think it has a pretty low rating still across all social media platforms, like Letterboxd, for example. I think it has a 2.9 star rating, even though it's one of the most logged movies of all time on that app. And the fact that people are still kind of making fun of it and at the same time celebrating it really speaks to its relevance and I guess its rightful spot in the media world. But yeah, all of these like reels and skits that people have done with it, I personally enjoy them. I think they're hilarious. But again, it is really touching on this idea of like even if something really sucks, there's something to be gleaned from it. And it is a lot of fun to interact with movies in that way. Because, like, you know, a lot of really artful films don't garner that type of reaction. So it is really special to be able to make fun of something that you love so much, or to even just have an entryway into conversations about what is good art versus bad art.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think, for me, I was actually one of the people that enjoy the social media portrayals of Twilight first before I moved on to the movie. So, you know, the whole scene of the biology class of Edward covering his face. Yeah, that was, for me, that was a meme before it was actually the real scene. And so I approached the movie in a more comedic lens than a more serious tone. And so it definitely, for me, influenced the way that I saw the movie, and it kind of switched up the tone a little bit. But I want to ask the thing that you mentioned with the disagreement, I guess you said, with scholars and about Jacob and Edward or something like that. Do you care to elaborate more on why they didn't enjoy the werewolves and vampires or something? Did you mention that? Do you remember?
Can you elaborate?
Do you think that the werewolves was a necessary character in the movie?
I think it expands upon the supernatural story world. I think it also allowed Stephenie Meyer to just create a love triangle. I really think that was all she wanted. Because for example, if Edward was a vampire and Bella was human, and there was another human character that was supposed to be her second love interest, it wouldn't be as interesting, and it would be such an easy choice. So to have a different kind of supernatural character to stand in for that role it was a choice.
I think it was interesting how the supernatural creature that was involved in that love triangle, which I also agree with you on how it was kind of interesting how it was a love triangle, was the fact that Jacob is a wolf, and a wolf is an animal that lives in human society. So a vampire is completely supernatural, where it's, I don't know if this is going to spark up a controversial statement, but I don't think I believe in vampires. If they are real, don't come after me. But for me, yeah, the interesting part was that the second supernatural creature was a wolf. And I kind of connected that into how wolves are almost accepted in a society where Bella lives, whereas vampires are not. And so I think that emphasizes the fact of splitting between the lines of good and bad in a very clear sense with vampires and wolves. You said you were Team Edward. Was that more so with like personal preference and like the chemistry that you see between Bella and Edward, or was it more so towards that, you know, the good and bad of the heroes and the villain arc?
I mean, it really does come down to personal preference. I know a lot of people that are Team Jacob, and I respect them for that, kind of. But I think it's also because, vampires are just more interesting to me. And I don't think it's necessarily about good or bad or not. Like, I think morality kind of goes up in the air in terms of supernatural media.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that vampires are in a way more interesting. I think they have more history that was portrayed in the movie. You know, they have this whole system, these laws. The only part that I remember with the werewolves is that they have a pack, and they also have a very strict hierarchy system. Mm-hmm. But it seems like Jacob kind of broke it in a way, you know, I guess he didn't break it because it was the scene where he actually imprinted on Renesmee. So I guess in that sense, they were following that sort of law. But it seems like it's not as strict as the vampires. And so it's kind of more like a community, like a family, more so than like a work environment where it's like, yeah, you're up here, I'm down here, you know, following certain laws and rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a lot of kinship with the werewolf community, and I don't think it's explored nearly enough. And I think that is kind of why I give Edward an edge. But it's also because if it came down to it, if it was between a man who can't respect boundaries and a man who will abandon you, I would probably go for the guy who abandons me, because Jacob just does not listen anytime Bella tells him no.
That is true. I cannot deny that. Jacob does kind of go past some boundaries. Do you think that the whole community buildup and kinship is stronger with Edward's family or with Jacob in terms of their supernatural creatures?
I think it can go either way, because for the Cullens, it's this idea of like the found family trope. And I think it's well done for the most part. I don't really believe that there's any like brotherly or sisterly love between them. You know, there's a lot of relationships that within that family, but there is a very strong connection, especially in terms of like a respect that's given to Carlisle's character, because he did save all of them in a way. But yeah, with the werewolves, it does feel more familial.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it does seem just more of like a relationship drama that's going on. Do you think there was a purpose to that, to make these characters supernatural, containing details with history and their powers and the laws that they follow? But then, you know, a scene that comes up in my head is when Bella's cold up in the mountain and Jacob is, you know, he has to warm her up because he's a werewolf. And Edward is a vampire, so he's very cold. And so you can kind of see the jealousy going back and forth. And it's almost just like regular people being jealous about, you know, relationships and the whole love triangle. Do you think there was a purpose that was served with having these love interests be supernatural creatures, but portray the same sense of jealousy that humans have, and, you know, that whole, you know, bantering that went on with the characters?
Yeah, I think any supernatural or fantastical media speaks to a human audience. I mean, that's what it's made for. So it makes sense that people would relate to it in that way, and that the characters would engage with it in that way. And I mean, as exciting as Twilight is, it is very obvious about the fact that it's for a teenage audience, and specifically for a female teenage audience. So I kind of appreciate that it doesn't shy away from that. It's not, they're not trying to convince us that this story world really exists or that these powers are the most important thing. It really boils down to who is Bella going to end up with. And I find that really funny and really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of almost up to time. So do you have any ending comments that you want to leave with the movie Twilight, whether it's the first one or all the way back to the last movie? And if you want to recommend it to anybody who has specific interests in this genre or the supernatural nature of the movie?
I guess all I have to say is, if you haven't seen Twilight yet, I highly suggest that you do. And do it with an open heart. Understand that even if you don't connect with it, it was made for a specific audience and it continues to speak to them. And there's a lot of value in that, I think. And even if you don't see value in that, I hope you still have fun.
Do you enjoy supernatural genres often? Or is that a genre that you expose yourself to often? Or was this kind of an exception for you?
Yeah, I grew up watching a lot of supernatural media. I grew up watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is a 90s TV show about a vampire hunter. So that is part of what drew me into Twilight. Yeah, I don't think anything has been created since that really nails that genre, though.
Wow, okay. For me, it's supernatural is very foreign. I don't really deal with a lot of supernatural movies. But I do deal with a lot of rom-coms, as we have discussed. So maybe next time, if you'd like, we can discuss a rom-com. But yeah, that's it for today's episode. For my guests, I always try to do a small game segment at the end. And what this is I create a set of would you rather questions. It's almost like an ending icebreaker. It's like a reverse, trying to follow that unconventional nature of how I host my shows. But it's very fun. All you need to do is give me an answer between the two options that I give you within a couple seconds.
Okay.
And after this, we will end it off for today's episode. So are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. Never celebrate Christmas again or Halloween?
Ooh. Halloween.
During Halloween, never dress up for it or never eat candy on that day?
Never eat candy.
Would you rather go skydiving while eating a durian fruit or a bungee jump solving a riddle? Keep in mind, you have to finish the fruit before you step on the ground when you're skydiving, and you have to solve the riddle before you finish bungee jumping.
I feel like you have more time skydiving, and I do enjoy durian, so I'll go with that one.
What does it taste like? I'm always curious. Does it taste as bad as it smells?
No, it tastes much better.
Okay.
And you get used to the smell.
Is it a sweet taste?
It's sweet, but texturally it's very interesting.
Like tofu?
You just have to go and try it for yourself. Okay. Yeah.
That's fair. Be able to make a home in 1 hour, whatever size you'd like, or a computer within 5 minutes?
Can you repeat that one?
So would you rather be able to physically make a home in 1 hour or make a computer within 5 minutes?
I need a new computer, so that one.
Have the ability to not feel cold ever again or never hot?
Never hot.
Rather have a full beard all the time or a mustache that appears three times randomly that you cannot shave a week?
A week?
Three times a week. So three times a week, but randomly.
And with the beard, it would be all the time.
Yes.
Would I be able to shave it?
You would. You would be able to shave your beard.
I think I could rock a beard. I would feel like a okay. dwarf, and I think that's pretty cool.
All right. Be in a full season of your favorite show or have dinner one-on-one with three of your favorite celebrities.
I would choose the dinner.
Never have the craving for tea or never have the craving for any type of pastry.
Never have a craving for tea.
Have a magic carpet that only works for you or have the ability to turn into any species of a bird.
Oh, that one's interesting. I think bird.
All right, the last one is be allergic to two of your favorite foods or choose only 10 dishes to eat for the rest of your life.
10 dishes to eat.
What are your two favorite foods?
I don't know. I'm fine with only having 10 options. That's okay. A lot.
Wow. Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Sobin, for coming on the show. You are more than welcome to come back. And I hope you guys enjoyed listening. I will see you all next week. Bye-bye, everyone.
Yeah. Listening to C
I
T R 101.9 Vancouver.
God damn it, baby, no, I ain't lying to you. I'm only gonna tell you one time.
A groin-grabbingly great station.
When you come back down, a little silence puts you back on the mound, a little violence. You're such a bad believer. Yeah, I'm such a bad believer, bad believer, new religion, bad. Don't you think it's time to see her, time to see her, time to see her, time to see her? Then you come back down, it gets so quiet. Jack, you back on the coming on my bread, believer, bread, believer, bread, believer, bread. And don't you think it's time to see her?
don't know when I'll rise, guys. No. The sounds you are currently hearing might be the result of the Audio Phenomenon Project. This is Purple Crow on CITR 101.9 FM.